This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. 20 years ago this coming August, President Clinton signed what's officially known as the Personal Responsibility and Work Opportunity Reconciliation Act of 1996. More colloquially, it was welfare reform, one of the key campaign promises that Bill Clinton had made as a candidate and which is still seen as one of his big domestic policy achievements. With that 20 years of hindsight, then, our Chrissy Clark has been digging deep into what effect welfare reform has actually had and is here to tell us about it. Hey, Chrissy.
Hey, Kai. I have this CD that I really want to play for you, and I promise that it will all make sense in just a minute.
Okay. So music CD? Music?
Yes,
all
music.
Right, music. Here we go. This is amazing. This is amazing. First of all, you're dancing to it in the studio, which is a whole different thing. What is that music? Where did it come from?
I know. It is so deeply stuck in my head at this point. So this is basically an archaeological artifact from the years leading up to welfare reform. It was made in the early 90s. And I have a copy of the CD that I brought in to show you.
All right. So it's called Work Makes the Difference, Riverside County Department of Public Social Services, copyright 1993. Wow. County Riverside, California. So who are they? Where did this come from?
This is basically the staff of a county welfare office.
Huh.
And they produced and wrote the songs and performed on this CD.
Wow. We will, I am sure, get back to this CD in a minute. But there's some context here, right? Because we have had cash welfare in this country for a long, long time. Like, it was part of the Social Security Act back in FDR's days, the whole deal.
Yeah, 1935, right. It was passed into law as part of the sweeping set of safety net programs that FDR signed. And the whole point of this one program was specifically to help poor single mothers out.
Hmm.
The idea was that we wanted to help them stay out of the workforce.
Which is not the way it works today, right? I mean, there's work requirements before you get a check, lots.
Right. In the 80s and 90s, we started to do this flip where the whole debate became not how to keep women out of the workforce so they could raise their kids, mm-hmm. but how to get women on welfare into the workplace. Actually, it turns out a lot of them were already working, but it wasn't a requirement for welfare.
And that actually is why you're here. We're going to be talking about the consequences of those policies in a series over the next couple of weeks. And also a whole new podcast from Wealth and Poverty. Yeah?
Yes, it just came out. We're calling it The Uncertain Hour.
Ooh.
And this season, we're going to be asking the question, 20 years after we, quote, ended welfare as we know it, what the heck is welfare now? And we'll be hearing from lots of different voices over the course of the series, from people on welfare to people who wish they were on welfare. But to start things off today, I want to get you into the minds of some of the early reformers of welfare, which brings us to the story of that CD and the man behind it.
My name is Lawrence Townsend.
Larry, for short. He's got close-cropped white hair and one of those Army General smiles that never quite turns up at the edges. Today, Larry is 79, retired. He lives in a beach town in California where he drives around in a green Cadillac Seville with a brass frame around the license plate. And etched into the brass, it says,
"Life works if you work."
Larry loves work. Just the idea of it. It's one of the two main concepts that define his worldview. The second thing that defines Larry, as much as he loves work, he hates welfare. It's his other obsession.
I've seen so much damage to people that are on welfare. They have no hope for a better future. They aren't setting a good example for their children.
And he's got a collection of stories devoted to this belief. Anecdotes that date back decades to his early career in county government, like the one about his visit to a welfare office where he saw two kids waiting for their mom in the lobby playing pretend.
One of the children was playing the welfare recipient. The other one was playing the eligibility worker. Now you tell me they aren't learning how to get on welfare. That one causes tears still.
This is the kind of anecdote that gets told and retold among critics of welfare, an individual moment that may not be typical of welfare recipients in general, but for critics represents all the failings of the system. But what makes Larry's anecdotes unique? 2 decades ago, he was in a position to do something about them because he became the head of a welfare department in a big suburban county east of L.A. called Riverside. The way he saw it, his role in this welfare office?
To invade and conquer. That was my attitude.
And in the late 80s, he got the perfect chance to wage his war. At the time, the government was reconsidering its approach to cash welfare for poor families. But then the question was, how? And Larry Townsend had some ideas.
I was absolutely stunned that I was given freedom to design a program, to implement a program. There was an opportunity to change the concept of welfare.
Larry's changes happened under a pilot program in California called Greater Avenues for Independence, GAIN for short. There were two basic avenues county welfare offices could experiment with. Some went the education and training route. The idea was to help poor single moms who'd often dropped out of school get more skills, maybe a GED, to fare better on the job market. Larry did not have much patience for that approach. His approach in Riverside, much simpler and cheaper.
Get people into a job immediately.
Just don't worry about, are you trained enough or do you have enough education? Just get that job.
We're not going to train you for years. We're not going to send you to school for years. We're going to show you how to find a job.
You can still hear the conviction in Larry's voice almost 30 years later. Listen to that.
How to find a job.
And the point of this job-first approach wasn't to find the perfect job or even a very well-paying job.
But at least your foot is in the door, and how well you succeed from there is up to you.
With one important catch.
If you do not cooperate with us, we will take you off of welfare.
To carry out his jobs-first plan, Larry restructured his welfare office to run job search classes and job clubs.
I remember being at the GAIN office and they
Sophia
said they
Elsman
to...
had just signed up for welfare in Riverside at the time. She'd grown up poor. Her family had been on welfare when she was a child. And now that she and her husband had just split up, she needed some help supporting her kids while she looked for a job and got her life back together. Her intake worker said she'd need to enroll in the GAIN pilot program.
They said it's to get you out there in the workplace, which was fine with me. Because that's what I wanted to do anyways. You know, I've been working since I was 14 years old.
Sophia says there were workshops on finding jobs.
How to fill out applications, how to do interviews.
They'd get a list of leads, she says, and be told to start calling around. There was kind of a Weight Watchers vibe to it. When they landed an interview, people would cheer. But all this was just the beginning of Larry Townsend's plans for the welfare recipients of Riverside. Larry's vision was much bigger.
Infect welfare recipients with a positive attitude, with the beauty and glory of work. And so I became sort of like a preacher for work.
And a preacher needs tools to evangelize.
I have a few materials that I can show you. Booklets, posters, billboards.
Almost 30 years later, Larry still has his files.
There's some that I wanted to show you.
All the marketing ephemera his office made, full of welfare-to-work slogans.
Success stands on your backbone, not your wishbone. Action turns dreams into realities. Get into gear. Start a career.
I am the difference.
Self-sufficiency is supporting
yourself.
A person who aims at nothing has a target he can't miss.
Be proud of honest labor.
Don't wait for your ship to come in. Swim out to it.
Going through Larry's archives is like walking through a gift shop at a national landmark commemorating work. There are souvenirs of every variety designed to appeal to as many of a welfare recipient's senses as possible. Messages printed on bumper stickers, on buttons, messages you could see, you could touch. And for the ears, well, there was this.
I thought music is a very inspirational form of communication.
And so Larry made that CD that you heard a bit of before called Work Makes the Difference. He used $2,000 of taxpayer money, no authorization, to record it.
And I figured I might get fired over it.
But he didn't. This is the first track, the title track.
Will your children be the next generation? Or will you be the last? Welfare's temporary, not a way of life. Be proud of honest labor, have dignity and pride.
The music was made to be played in welfare waiting rooms over the PA system, to be the hold music when people called up the welfare office. It would play during voicemail greetings. There are 10 songs in all, different genres to appeal to different demographics, Larry says. There's a song that features a whole rap section.
Supporting yourself is helping yourself. You've got to have some dignity and pride.
And then there's a jazzy Andrew Sisters sort of 40s thing that is very hard not to snap your fingers to. And whether it was the songs themselves, or the buttons, the billboards, the bumper stickers, the job clubs, or just the job-first strategy altogether, somehow Larry's plan in Riverside seemed to work.
The results in Riverside were the most impressive we had ever seen in a welfare-to-work program up to that time.
This is sociologist James Riccio. He was actually hired by the government to study Riverside's Jobs First program. Turns out the families who participated in it, 5 years later, they were doing way better than the ones who stayed on the plain old welfare program where they just got checks, no job clubs or job pep talks. The Job First folks had more jobs. They were making more money. They were also doing better than the people on welfare who lived in other parts of the state and got the education-first strategy instead. And because of all of this,
Larry Townsend, the director, became a kind of star in this narrow world of welfare reform.
But this narrow world was about to widen and play a very big role on the national stage. And Larry's get-a-job, any-job approach for welfare recipients became known as
Riverside Miracle.
A miracle that paved the way for the federal welfare reform bill that was signed into law in 1996 and ended welfare as we know it. There's just one catch. Years later, after all that had happened, it turned out the Riverside Miracle wasn't such a miracle after all.
Marketplace's Chrissy Clark on 20 years after welfare reform. More to come on the radio on this story and to hear the final twist in this particular story and how Larry's foray into the music business would make for some very surreal Senate hearings. You can subscribe to our new podcast from the Wealth and Poverty Desk. It's called The Uncertain Hour, and it is available wherever you choose to do your downloading. It's pretty good. Check it out.